The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Keith Olbermann has done it. Keith Olbermann has cracked the case. He has righted the ship. He has dealt the Trump administration such a severe gut punch that he can now retire from political commentary for good. Here he is. If you didn't know, Keith Olbermann actually has a job. He started something with GQ called The Resistance. And here is a piece of the last episode.
So now that I think the outcomes, the seven different inevitable outcomes, are unavoidable, I'd like to go back and enjoy some of my life again, and I'm going to. No illness, no scandal, no firing, just I've said what I've had to say. It was as obvious as I made it seem. I give my work everything I can, so it's not like I can dial it back. And I think even this dim-witted world of American political TV reporting, which is still calculating how to get Trump's idiot supporters to watch their networks and still waiting for Trump to pivot, even it can carry this the rest of the way. So I am retiring from political commentary in all media venues.
And the crowd cheers. Apparently, the weight of a 7 to 10 minute internet segment for GQ was just too much weight to carry. He couldn't go on with his life and carry that 7 minutes for GQ. I have no idea how he endured such a heavy burden for so long. My God, man, it's been months. How much of a workload can the human body take? Olbermann and the GQ resistance are apparently declaring victory. This was their version of the George W. Bush mission accomplished speech, whereas Bush delivered his from an aircraft carrier dressed in a flight suit. Olbermann sat, you know, pretty in a trendy suit in front of a perfectly colored GQ backdrop that I think might have been done possibly by the elevators in the building. So what's got the resistance so confident that Keith can now retire? Listen.
I am confident now, even more so than I have been throughout the last year, that this nightmare presidency of Donald John Trump will end prematurely and end soon. And I am thus also confident that this is the correct moment to end this series.
Oh, wow. Now, so what's got him so confident about the president going to be impeached? Well, is it something, a new revelation from the Mueller investigation? Sure, he mentions Flynn and Mueller right off the bat. But then he mentions another possible way Trump could get fired. And then another, and then another one. He goes on to list 7 harebrained theories ranging anywhere from Russia to obstruction of justice to Pence initiating the 25th Amendment. So what's the ultimate coup de grace here? Is it definitely one of the 7 possible? Is it one of the above or none of the above? I guess the better question here is, what's the real reason for this video? He denies it, but was he actually fired? Maybe Keith's going back to ESPN. I don't know. But like they say on SportsCenter, or so I'm told, and I think everyone I can speak for everyone that watched the video. Hey, Olbermann, come on, man. Did I get that right, Stu?
That's way better than I expected.
Good. Okay.
It's Tuesday, November 28th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The ESPN line was written by Stu Bergier. Trying to make me sound
like you knew what you were talking
like
about.
I knew exactly what I was talking about.
By the way, how can 7 different outcomes be inevitable?
I'm not really sure.
Is that possible?
No, not really. But in Keith's world, everything is possible. I mean, I would imagine that there was just nothing to watch there, you know, on the resistance. And GQ didn't fire him. It was just kind of like, nobody's watching, man. I don't think we should do this anymore.
Now, he claimed that there were, in the video, he claims that there were he had 400 million views of his commentary.
400 million views. Wow. You should be able to, prove that. I mean, pretty easily.
You know, there's a lot of ways you can look at those numbers. You know, maybe if he's, he said he did, I think, 150 episodes or something like that. So 150. So about 3 million an episode. Is that possible? I guess. I don't know. I don't know what kind of impact Keith has these days. But apparently not that big of an impact because the president, as far as I know, still the president.
Still the president. Hadn't been impeached yet.
No.
There's a post from Carly Fiorina on Medium that I really want to get to next hour. She says it's time to man up. And... Yes, it is, but the way she puts it, I'm probably just, I guess I'm the most ignorant man on the planet because I'm not aware of the things that she says that all men know, and I'm not.
Well, you're. I mean, that would assume you're a man.
Was that easy enough for you? Was that an easy enough layup? I mean,
You are one of seven different possibilities, but none of them are man.
let me give you this story from the Washington Post. A woman approached the Washington Post with a dramatic and false tale about Roy Moore. She appears to be part of an undercover sting operation. The reporter was Stephanie McCrummon of the Washington Post. A woman who falsely claimed to the Washington Post that Roy Moore, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Alabama, impregnated her as a teenager, appears to work with an organization that uses deceptive tactics to secretly record conversations in an effort to embarrass its targets. In a series of interviews over 2 weeks, the woman shared a dramatic story about an alleged sexual relationship with Moore in 1992 that led to an abortion when she was 15. During the interviews, she repeatedly pressed Post reporters to give their opinions on the effects that her claims would have on Moore's candidacy if she went public. The Post didn't publish an article based on her unsubstantiated account. When Post reporters confronted her with inconsistencies in her story and an internet posting that raised doubts about her motivations, she insisted that she was not working with any organization that targets journalists. But Monday morning, Post reporters saw her walking into the New York offices of Project Veritas, an organization that targets mainstream news media and left-leaning groups.
It's a facepalm is...
Oh, jeez. I mean, how stupid do you have to be? How stupid do you have to be? First of all, she posted something in her past. You can't get away from your past. She posted something in her past that said, hey, I'm going to New York and I'm going to go to work for an organization that exposes the mainstream media and their liberal bias. And we're going to get the words out. Well, the Washington Post found that and was like, wait a minute. You said you worked at like a mortgage company. And by the way, we called the mortgage company and they say you don't work there.
Well, it could be a mortgage company that's exposing liberal media bias.
No one thought about that. Do we have the audio, Sarah? This is the Washington Post. They did their own. They ran a video themselves of the takedown.
So, but you were interested in doing this job. Can you talk about that a little bit?
That's the reporter.
Yeah, it was going to be with the Daily Caller.
The Daily Caller.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it ended up falling through, so I wasn't able to do it.
Uh-huh.
Because my fiance was relocating to New York, so I was looking for a job to go with him.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't work out, so I ended up just staying doing what I was doing at the time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what was your interest in working for the Daily Caller?
I like their stories, and uh-huh. I thought that I would be good at doing research and stuff like that. Because
mm-hmm.
just based on my background with the mortgage business, like that's
stop.
Well, I mean, look, the background of mortgage.
It goes right to journalism.
Right there.
It goes right there.
It's just one step from amortization schedule to liberal media bias. It's like it's almost the same job.
It's right there. Mm-hmm. I thought I would be good investigator, you know, because of my mortgage experience.
That's solid.
Okay, continue.
combating the lies and deceit of the liberal MSM? Do you still have an interest in working in the conservative media movement to combat the lies and deceit of the liberal MSM? Is that still your interest?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No.
So if you're not working for that mortgage company, where are you working?
I work for one of the branches. I don't work
for one of the
corporate office.
Uh-huh. And what's the franchise?
It's a
you said
brand. A brand, yeah.
A brand.
Maverick.
Yeah.
And
where is that?
In it was out of Atlanta.
It was out of Atlanta?
And they allow us to work remotely.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so where...
So where are you working now? Well, the mortgage. Yeah, but we called and you're not working at the... Well, I was working at a branch. A branch. A branch? Yes. Where was that located? Well, it was out of Atlanta, but they let us work from home.
I mean,
I'd like to give the Washington Post credit for, you know, doing their homework, but I don't think it was that hard on this one.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think what's the point of this, right? Like, take the Project Veritas thing. What is it? What are they trying to do?
Well, they're Project Truth.
Right, truth, right.
Veritas is truth.
Yes. So... the idea being, and I think that this is something that many of us would believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
That in the middle of this frenzy,
mm-hmm.
if someone comes to the Washington Post with mm-hmm. a story about Roy Moore,
mm-hmm.
they're going to pretty much accept it without asking questions. We've seen that happen mm-hmm. at, for example, Rolling Stone.
Yes.
Right? Rolling Stone did almost exactly this thing.
Yes.
They had this person come up with a relatively believable story and they printed it.
Yes.
So the fact that the Washington Post could do this is something that you could see as possible. On the other side of this, they didn't do it. This should be something that we should, as conservatives, celebrate. And the idea that they had an opportunity to take this BS story and run with it and didn't. They looked into it.
They did their job.
They did what they say they do.
Yeah.
Right?
If you watch this whole video, she goes into, well, we did this and this. As soon as we met with you, we started looking into you. And, you know, some things fall apart here. And I mean, how great is that? How great is that?
Good. I mean, that doesn't mean
it doesn't mean the Washington Post is clear. It means that this reporter does her job. And that's good. And if I were the head of Project Veritas, I wouldn't have put, you know, a fundraising letter out last night saying, ha ha, we got another one and they're going to make it even harder for us. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Project Veritas. Truth. You didn't. What you caught was the Washington Post doing their job and not getting fooled by you. That's good, is it not? Isn't that what we should be wanting? No. Instead, what we want is we want to catch them doing it. Well, we just caught them not doing it. Why isn't that a win? Why isn't that? Because the project isn't about truth, apparently. The project is about winning. Truth would demand that Project Veritas would come out and say, we tried to pull this over, and we were bad at it, but we tried to pull this over the Washington Post. They caught us because they actually engaged. The story wasn't more important than the truth to them. Congratulations to this reporter. Great job.
And it doesn't mean you have to get the liberal media. They're not off for everything they've ever done.
No.
That doesn't mean that everything in the Washington Post is now credible.
You caught them doing something right.
You question them when you think something's wrong the same way you would before. But you tried to do something where you presented, you gave them a softball of not only, we mentioned this quickly, but not only another sexual accusation, but Roy Moore paying and driving this woman to get an abortion. Right.
That's a knockout.
It should have been a feeding frenzy. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And they stopped and they looked into it and they found out it wasn't true. And of course, after that, they tailed her to the Project Veritas offices,
they just followed her from the interview to the office of Project Veritas. I mean, this is, guys, you're not as good as you think you are. Arrogance will be all of our undoing. So last summer, I told you I was freaked out by my son. I came home and I discovered that my son's voice had changed. And, you know, that story's not new. You blink your eyes and all of a sudden your kids are driving the car and your kids are grown up. And what happened? I want to urge you to pick up a game called Say Anything. There's no stress. There's no timer. I have a daughter who has epileptic seizures, and so she can't get stressed out at all. And, you know, we can't have all kinds of stuff. So we have to play simple games. My wife hates games like Monopoly. She hates games where, you know, somebody is eyeing to win, because when she was a kid, her brother was so competitive. So we have very few games we can play. Anyway, Say Anything is a relaxed game. It takes about 30 minutes. And in those 30 minutes, I'm telling you, you'll learn more about your kids and the way they think than a month of driving them to and from soccer practice. One of those games where kids' ideas are often more profound than the ideas that we think they have. Say Anything, not just for parents and kids. Anyone can play. It's a great game for all ages. It's a few weeks before Christmas. If you want your family to start talking together, start laughing together, start playing together, Say Anything. You can get it at Target and Toys R Us. Say Anything, available now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Okay, so there's, you know, ISIS targeting New York City for Christmas. There is, you know, financial crisis. There is the story of the tax bill going in front of Congress. The president's going to talk to Congress today. And I say to Stu, so what's on top of your list that you think we need to cover today? And he says,
Meghan Markle.
And I say, the prince thing?
Yes.
Harry or whatever his name?
Yeah.
That royal story?
Who cares about the stupid prince? The stupid prince and this dumb monarchy is screwing up my television. She's one of the stars of Suits on USA, which is one of my favorite shows. And as soon as this happened, I was like, this stupid prince better not screw up my favorite show. What happens? She's retired from acting. She's like 20. And she's retired from acting because she has to go live as a freaking princess in this country that we've... How many times have we bailed them out? First of all, we dragged them into civilization by us leaving them in the first place. Secondly, I mean, what would have happened to that? It wouldn't even be an island if it wasn't for us. And now they're stealing our incredibly talented actresses from one of the best shows on television. And now they're going to have to come up with some stupid thing, like she's going to take a job at another firm, or she's going to become a waitress, or go do charity, or whatever she's going to do to write her out of the stupid show. And what? Because you have a monarchy in 2017, you're screwing up my Wednesday nights. Because you have a monarchy in 2017. This is infuriating.
Yeah, I haven't seen you this passionate about anything in...
Since Coke Zero was pulled off the market. That's the last story.
You have weird trigger points. You really do.
I will say the observation of the year may go to Greg Polowitz, who I think we've had on the show before, but he's a smart guy. But he writes, Prince Harry's kids will be Americans. What if one grows up to be president and is in line for the throne at the same time? Brits are playing the long ball here. It's a smart move. They want America back, and this is how they'll do it.
So wait a minute. She would have dual citizenship.
She could be he or she could be king king queen. I don't know with all the gender stuff what I'm allowed to do here, but king/queen/president theoretically at the same time. probably they'd come up with a way to block that.
I would think they might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about this, Prince? You got a lot of money. Buy an apartment in the city, somewhere in the United States or in Canada, because they shoot a lot of the show in Toronto, and you can just both live there. You don't have to live in America or the UK. You could just compromise and move to Toronto, and she can still do the stupid show. How about that?
I can't believe that she's an actress and the queen is going to let an actress in.
What do you mean, let an actress in?
Oh, my gosh. Have you watched? Oh, boy.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, you're going to make fun of me for Suits, and then you're about to reveal what you watch.
Have you watched The Crown?
No.
That's really good.
I'm sure it is.
It's really, really good. But watching The Crown, you simultaneously feel so horrible for these people, the life they live. And then you also hate their guts because they're just whiny brats. But it's amazing how their love life is just dictated, really, by Parliament and the Prime Minister.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You don't want to miss the Chalkboard series this week at 5 o'clock on the Glenn Beck Program. This week we're taking on the Deep State. What is the Deep State? It's four-part series. Started last night, but you can join it and check it out and watch yesterday's episode before tonight. But it is explaining the Deep State, because everybody says, oh, we've got problems with the Deep State. It's the Deep State taking them out. It's the Deep State. Well, what is the Deep State? There are two kinds of deep states, and we have one kind and not the other kind. What does that mean? How does it work? What do you do to fight against it? All this week, only on the Glenn Beck Program on the Blaze TV. I read a story a couple of weeks ago about a guy who has put Christmas lights up on his home for 30 years. He's decorated his home in Arizona. And he spends like 3 months decorating and getting everything right. Nobody's ever complained in his neighborhood. Somebody moved, and then a new family moved in, and they complained to the city and said that, you know, the traffic is just horrible. And so the city came in and said, you have to stop this, because he was violating code, because he was selling hot chocolate to try to pay for, you know, the work of putting the lights up, et cetera, et cetera. He said, I'll give it away. They said, you can't even do that. So he stopped decorating for the first time in 30 years. His name is Lee Stepanek, and Lee is with us now. Hello, Lee. How are you?
Good. How are you, Glenn?
So tell me what the reaction has been in your neighborhood.
Oh, the neighborhood, once they found out what was going on, is totally upset. I still have cars driving by just to see the dark house. But, of course, we turned the tables on the city a little bit, as we took all of my lights and we've decorated 10 homes on my street.
Wow. Wow.
So now, and then other neighbors have joined in. So now my street, which is about 15 houses that are now decorated, and there's only about three that are not.
And were one of those three the one that complained? Do you know who complained?
Yes, I know.
Yeah. And did they talk to you about it or anything? Because I have to be honest with you, Lee. I lived in Connecticut. And there was a house on my street, and there was only one way to get to my house, and it was on the street. And the guy spent, I loved it, and became friends with him and everything else. He would spend 3-4 months putting them up and taking them down. And he loved it, and people would come from all over. I, on the other hand, as a neighbor that was just trying to get home, hated the traffic, but I lived with it. Can you understand why somebody would be like, I mean, this is ridiculous on my street?
Well, I understood that completely, and I've always said for years, now, I've lived in this home on this street since 1973. So basically what has happened is I've outlived the neighbors. Mm. Because the people that were living here when I moved in have passed away, or some of them have moved away. So the ones that complained moved in not even a year ago. I looked up the tax records, and they moved in February of 2016. So the first Christmas they experienced what I've got going on here, it caused them to complain to the city. But I've since learned from their immediate neighbors that they're the type that complain about everything, I guess. They actually went so far as to ask one of their neighbors to cut down a tree on their property because some of their leaves were blowing into their yard.
Wow. Okay. All
okay. Right. So you know the kind we're talking about?
Yeah, I do. I've had those kinds of neighbors, and you know it, what solves that is if you just mysteriously find bamboo planted somewhere in their yard. And anyway, that's a different story.
Well, I offered to, if it was a matter of block driveways, I offered to have signs printed that state, please do not block this driveway. I was going to go and put them at the leading edge of everyone's driveway up and down my street. And the city official from streets and traffic said, no, I couldn't do that because it's a right-of-way. And I was like, but there's no sidewalks. So where am I impeding the people's natural flow if there's no sidewalks?
So what are you going to do now, Lee? I mean, I'm just looking. If you're watching on the Blaze TV, you're seeing this is... I mean, what are you paying your power bill?
My power bill run me about $1,500 a year.
It's quite the show. So what are you going to do? You're not going to do it this year, but you say you are going to do it next year.
The way it's shaping up right now, the city has backed off on the cocoa being offered for donation. So they've backed off on that due to pushback from the neighborhood, from legal. Basically, I got representation from, because I have an individual who's been coming here for years and his children are little, and when he found out I wasn't going to do this anymore, he got all up in arms and contacted a whole bunch of people that he knew that came to my support, and have been great about it. And our own District 6 councilman, as soon as he heard about this, he went to the city and started working on my behalf to get this overturned. So as it looks right now, it looks pretty good that we will probably do it again next year.
So you also started a GoFundMe page, and you started that because you were taking the profits of the hot cocoa. And, you know, that allowed you to do this and put the lights up and buy new stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And the city won't let you do that because you don't have a license. So now you're trying to raise the money through GoFundMe?
That's correct. Yep. So what I used to get out of the, and I didn't make that, I mean, I was selling a cup of cocoa for a dollar.
Right.
Okay. So it probably cost me 50 cents with the cup, the lid, the liquid, the powder. So how much money could I possibly be making? It's not like I made a lot. The show never made a profit, okay? But it helped take the sting out of the cost.
I'm seeing the video. It looks like almost like a, I don't know, a fair or something.
Yeah, that's one of my decorated windows. I have six of them. That's the reason why people stop, get out of their cars, and come to, I mean... My windows rival Macy's. I mean, they're just all animated.
Did you Everyone build this? Because things. I'm looking at it and I can't. I mean, it looks like a legitimate fair. Did you make all of that?
No, I've been collecting stuff for over 40 years, and you know, I think the window you have there, the combination, that's with the train, and
yeah,
that's actually my kitchen window. And everyone is done differently. I don't think I even sent you the one. I could send you the one.
There's
with
like
the real fair,
like the teacup, the teacup thing. It was
amazing.
Was in there.
Yep.
Lee, I can't even bring myself to go to the gym for 15 minutes. You're spending 9 to 10 hours a day for 3 months. So this begins in what, August?
September.
September.
This year we went to storage. Got the lights out the third week of September. Takes about 2 weeks to go through the lights and fix them and get them ready to go. And then we start beginning. In fact, I had the lights here. We had been working on them for 2 weeks when I met with the city. And I hadn't started to decorate yet. So then after meeting with them, I decided they were just making it too... They can't directly tell me I cannot put up my lights. But if you take and make it difficult all the way around in every other aspect, you discourage people from doing so.
Yeah.
And that's what they tried to do.
Yep.
So how old a man are you, Lee?
I'm 66 years old.
You're 66. And when you say we put the lights up, who's the we?
I have a gentleman who volunteers his time and helps, and then my wife. So the three of us.
And has your wife ever said, okay, Lee, enough?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that every year.
Yeah.
Okay. You know?
Yeah. All right.
You have to understand, we go out every night from Thanksgiving to New Year's, greet people, serve up cookies or cocoa. Only nights we are not out there is if it's pouring down rain, and then I don't turn the lights on anyway because it's not safe.
Why do you do it, Lee?
It's just something I've been doing since I was 10 years old, living in New England. I'm from Massachusetts originally, and started doing it when I was a kid, living with my parents, and moved to Phoenix in 73. Didn't do it for a number of years until my youngest was born, and we would go around looking at other people's lights in the valley. And he started saying, well, we don't have any in our house. Why can't we do it at our house? So we started doing it. And it started out small, and it's grown into what it is today.
I'm fascinated by this. So September, October, November is set up. Then through November and December to January, you're out there working it every day with the lights. And then there's a teardown process. How long does the teardown take?
Usually a month. If it's 3 months up or so, it's a month and a half to take it down, put it away.
I mean, that is legitimately half of your year.
Yes.
That's an incredible amount of dedication. I mean, I like Christmas, but...
I don't think I'd ever take them down, Lee.
Yeah, I think you just leave them up.
I'd be excited to put them up, and then I'd look at it afterwards, and I'm like, I don't care. I'm just going to leave them up.
You know what? I kind of hate that. When it's 115 degrees, and you're driving around Phoenix, and you see icicle lights hanging off people's
feet. Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's a good look. I would just not be motivated to spend a month and a half.
I think you just tarp the whole house.
Yeah,
you just put a big tarp over the top of it, and then you just move somewhere else.
Camouflage netting over the house.
You know, that would be great. The only problem is a lot of this stuff is made out of plastic, and our son ruins that. And if you were to leave this stuff up by the next year, half of it would be no good anyway.
Yeah, all right. Lee, best of luck to you. Do you have the address for the... Stu, do you happen to have that, the GoFundMe page?
GoFundMe, I do. Let's see. GoFundMe.com. It says Help Relight Christmas House is where you can go to find it.
Yeah.
And that would be it's a great goal. It's going to put you back to work, though, Lee. I hope you're prepared for that.
That's okay. I look forward to it every year. People don't realize this is a year-round thing for me because if I'm not putting it up or taking it down, I'm planning.
God bless your wife. God bless your wife, Lee.
Yes, I know. Yes.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Great. Lee Sipanek is the guy who's doing the Christmas display in Phoenix. It's GoFundMe.com/HelpRelightChristmasHouse. I had one string of lights that I had to hang on the back porch of our house, and I put it up in like October of, I guess it was 2015, and it came down last summer. So it was, I kept it up through the whole year.
Yeah, good.
And then it lasted until they just started deteriorating so much that I had to dig them down because they physically didn't work anymore.
Yeah, you're a class act all the way.
That's me.
So I went and I got a new tree. You know, we've done fake trees forever. And we went out and we cut our trees down and this year and brought it into the house. And so I had to go get lights. Yesterday, Tanya comes home from Hobby Lobby. And she said, we want the big Christmas bulbs, you know, like my grandparents used to have the big Christmas bulbs.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah. And so she came and they were halogen and we put them up and it was like, those aren't right. That's not right.
They haven't nailed the like 50s through 80s Christmas lights.
They have. They've just remade them.
Right.
And I said, no, these aren't the right lights. And she said, but the other ones get so hot. And we were talking about it. And this is probably the wrong move, but I'm kind of willing to have the tree light on fire and just have a just have some sort of a fire extinguisher around the tree in case it does for the beauty of the lights, for the memories. How did we not all burn to death?
I don't know. And you know, people are like, oh, I got to have a natural tree. Forget it. I did it for many, many years. And then I got an artificial tree. And you know what? Never have to worry about it. We keep that thing up all year round, too. Did I tell you that?
No, you didn't.
No, I do. Because we kept taking the tree down. And then you put it in the box or whatever, yeah. And it gets all folded up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to come out and fluff all the branches when you put it back up. And I said, we have that garage. Why don't we just put the thing up as is in the garage?
Oh, I don't have a problem with that.
So now it's just up there all the time, all year round.
In the garage?
In the garage.
Not a problem with that.
I think it's smart.
Have you seen the huge tree in the lobby?
Yeah, huge.
Okay, so we have I don't even know what that is. A 20-foot tree, all decorated, everything. It's for the lobby. I asked Tim the other day, who decorated the tree? And he's like, oh, I don't know. It was decorated 4 years ago. We just wrap it up in bubbly wrap and put it in the back. And I'm like, why aren't I doing that at home?
That's brilliant.
It's exactly what should be done. You just need some sort of a place. But your tree needs to be on wheels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tree needs to be on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And probably shouldn't be one that easily catches on fire. Anyway, Casper. Casper has the new Wave mattress, and it is incredible. Casper collected 3 years of data, feedback, foam research, and sleep science, and they went and they looked at all of this data. They said, we can make a better mattress, especially for the people who have chronic pain in their hips or their shoulders or their knees. So they came up with what's called the Wave. It's a natural support system that mirrors your body's curvature for a deeper and more restorative sleep. If you're not sleeping, your body is not healing. Casper Wave, they have the top layer that's incredibly soft but doesn't get in the way of experiencing the sport below. And it's all made out of breathable foam, so you sleep cool year-round. That is the real breakthrough for this mattress. Casper, as a brand, is this foam. It's not hot. And if you've ever slept on a foam mattress, you know those things are fire hell hot. Not with a Casper. Now you add the Wave in, you've got the perfect mattress. Try it in your own home for 100 nights, risk-free, and with free shipping and returns. Go to Casper.com, use the promo code Beck. You can save $75 on your purchase. That's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Minimum purchase is required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I had a friend write me last night after we did a segment on Bitcoin and what it is and how it works. We were talking about Satoshi Nakamoto. How do you say his name?
Nakamoto.
We don't even know who the guy is. Just picked a name. He's the inventor of Bitcoin. Has a million himself. There's a rumor that he is actually
Glenn Beck.
I'll tell you next.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Who do you trust anymore? President Trump doesn't care about Puerto Rico, right? That's what the media would have had us believe. Donald Trump does not care about Puerto Rico. We know that from the coverage during Hurricane Maria. The big part of the media's narrative was that President Trump was too slow to send aid to Puerto Rico. He didn't send enough aid. He took too long to visit Puerto Rico. Then he cared more about, the hurricane hits in Houston and Florida, and then the squabble between him and the mayor. It was a nightmare. All of this is debatable unless you got your news from the media. The media seemed poised to make Puerto Rico into Trump's Katrina, disregarding the unique circumstances of Maria falling so soon after Harvey and Irma. And, you know, the fact that Puerto Rico is 1,000 miles off of the coast of Florida. It turns out that when the media couldn't get any traction on the Trump hates Puerto Rico storyline, they actually didn't care about Puerto Rico's hurricane struggles either, at least as not as much as they cared about Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. Now, hats off to the Washington Post, who just published a story. Now, Washington Post does not like Donald Trump, but they published a story yesterday with the headline, "The Mainstream Media didn't care about Puerto Rico until it became a Trump story. Researchers at the MIT Media Lab found that mainstream media did not cover Maria nearly as extensively as they covered Harvey and Irma. Their report found that coverage did not increase until Trump had a feud with the mayor of San Juan. MIT found out that over 1,100 news outlets produced stories about Harvey and Irma, and only 500 carried stories about Maria. During the two-week period before and after each hurricane hit, online media ran 6,591 stories about Maria. The problem is, Harvey had 19,214 stories, and Irma had 17,338. MIT even did a language analysis of all of the hurricane coverage from the mainstream media. Guess what they found? The Maria stories featured far more political language, words like Congress, Senate, Democrats, Republicans, debt, or tax, while the coverage of Harvey featured far more words like victim and family. The bottom line is, the mainstream media claims President Trump doesn't care about Puerto Rico. But it's really clear the media didn't care that much either. This hypocrisy and moral high horse mentality from both sides has got to stop. Who do we trust? Well, I will tell you, 2 points for the Washington Post. A, not caring the lie about Roy Moore and actually doing their homework and finding out that they were being set up. There's a point. And this one, printing the story yesterday that takes on the media itself. Trump and the media need to stop obsessing over each other and then focus on doing their actual job.
It's Tuesday, November 28th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I go back to, who do you trust? The president is going back up to Capitol Hill today to have lunch, and he's trying to get the tax bill passed by Friday. We'll see if that happens or not. But the CBO just came out with a stunning report. Now listen to this.
Yeah, the CBO is basically claiming that, and they're claiming a lot of things.
They claim that we would be saving $2,000 per family with health care.
Right. And you go back to what they're claiming on the individual mandate we've covered at length on the show is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous, and they're not telling the truth about it. Their latest accusation here on the tax bill is that everyone paying under $30,000 will get a tax increase, and everyone over that will get a tax cut. Now, I don't know how. I mean, you look at the breakdowns of it, and it doesn't seem to make sense on its surface. The New York Times did, I think, a much more thorough analysis. And again, we don't know exactly what's going to be in this latest bill because it's not fully hammered out yet. They keep changing it. But basically what the New York Times is saying is if you take the standard deduction, and we won't get into any more nerdy tax talk than this, but if you take the standard deduction, you're almost definitely going to get a tax cut. If you itemize and you're in the middle class, you have a chance. It could be 50-50 whether you get a tax cut or a tax increase. Now, we've said this many times on the air. You've got control of the Senate. You've got control of the House. You've got control of the presidency. There is no reason for anyone to get a tax increase in any situation. These tax cuts should be so deep, they should take your breath away. But what we have here is
after the spending cuts,
and the spending cuts should be there too.
Yes,
I don't think after. I think at the same time.
Yeah, same time.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
they should be part of it, and you should be shrinking government and cutting the burden on the American people for everyone. Mm. That doesn't mean raise it on the rich people because they're evil and redistribute the wealth. That means cut it for everyone, and that it should be an easy goal for a party that says they're for small government and has control of everything to accomplish. That's not difficult. We're not shooting. This is not a high bar to clear. It is apparently for the Republican Party, which can't seem to even do that. And the way this is now, look, I think a lot of this is the fault of the CBO. I think they're scoring this. They definitely seem to have
A problem with math?
A problem, yes. And I think a seeming political
agenda. It used to be that the CBO was just always wrong. They would always underestimate the cost of something. They would, whatever they yep. said, oh, we're going to save X number of dollars. No, it ended up costing you money.
Yep.
Now, they are just so wrong, and it seems to have a political bend to it.
It does. It bends to the side of increasing government.
And again, I just want to point out what you just said. The New York Times did a better job at evaluating this than the CBO.
I think so. It's certainly more detailed. And, you know, their analysis is, you know, look, middle class, we all agree here. I think we all agree if you're a person who likes smaller government, who wants tax cuts, we believe the tax cuts should be for everyone. And the difference between us and Democrats, I mean, of course, they want many of them. They all want it raised on wealthy people, and some of them want it raised on everybody. But there's a general agreement that if we can cut taxes for people who are in the middle class and who are at lower income levels, that's a really good thing. Like, there's pretty broad agreement across the aisle on that one, you'd think. So, I don't know how you can have a system that raises taxes on anyone. I think a lot of it has to do with this idea that they have to be revenue neutral. The Republicans have bought into this idea that, well, what we're going to do is we're going to change things around, but don't worry, we'll still bring in the same amount of money or pretty close to it. And that's the wrong instinct to start with. You should start
with.
Is
that what revenue neutral means, or does it mean that we're not going to put on more debt?
Theoretically, because the way this is scored and the way that the reconciliation project package is put together is they can add up to $1.5 trillion of debt over 10 years. Now, that is, again, that's because, as you point out, there's no spending cuts built into this, really. There are certain things that act sort of as spending cuts and revenue offsets. But, I mean, in reality, when it comes down to it, is they've bought into this idea that they have to go please people like the CBO and say the exact same amount of money comes in. We're not cutting government. We promise. You're supposed to promise the opposite.
Yeah.
You're supposed to say, hey, we are cutting government. You know what? There's going to be a lot less revenue coming in. And what we're going to do as appropriate and sophisticated adults is also cut spending. We're going to do both of those things. That should be the goal, and it is not.
It is why the best president of the 20th century was not Ronald Reagan, in my opinion, was not JFK, certainly wasn't FDR. It was Coolidge, because the first thing that Coolidge did was he cut the size of government by 50%. And then the next year he cut it, I believe, by another 50%. I mean, he cut everything to the bone. Then he gave the tax cuts, not the other way around. And that's what spurred the economy on. That's what got everything going. Then it was just the greed of Wall Street and greed. It's just greed that brought us down in the 1930s. And it was progressive ideas that kept us down in the 1930s. Believe it or not, 2018 is right around the corner, and that means come January 1st, your car is going to be another year older and going to cost you more to fix. If you are out of your car's warranty, there is good news. Getting extended vehicle protection from CarShield could save you thousands in dollars. I have this. I have an old 2008 diesel that's running. It's great. It's in good shape, but it's a 2008. Something goes wrong with that thing and it's going to cost a fortune. Get the peace of mind that comes with being covered by CarShield, the ultimate in extended coverage. It's affordable protection that can save you hundreds, even thousands of dollars for covered repair. They even have plans that covers your car, computer, the GPS, electronics, and so much more. If your car is anywhere from 3 to 12 years old, it doesn't mean you have to pay high repair bills. You can have your favorite mechanic or the dealership do the work, and CarShield pays them directly. So sign up today. You get a special welcome bonus. You get 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is in the shop. CarShield, their administrators have already paid out close to $2 billion in claims, and they're ready to help you. Get your car covered by the ultimate extended vehicle service protection before it's too late. Call 800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code BECK and you will save 10% right now at carshield.com. Promo code BECK. carshield.com. Deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know, we're talking about tax cuts and spending cuts. Where are the spending cuts? I saw this from the New York Times. Diplomats sound the alarm as they are pushed out in droves. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at the White House on Monday, he made no secret of his belief that the State Department is a bloated bureaucracy. And they talk about how all of these people that worked in the State Department are just very, very nervous about our country, blah, 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 because they're all being fired. In a letter to Mr. Tillerson last week, the New York Times reports, Democratic members of the House Foreign Relations Committee, citing what they said was an exodus of more than 100 senior foreign service officers from the State Department since January, expressed concern about what appears to be the internal hollowing out of our senior diplomatic ranks. Mr. Tillerson, a former chief executive of ExxonMobil, has made no secret of his belief that the State Department is a bloated bureaucracy and that he regards much of the day-to-day diplomacy that lower-level officials conduct as unproductive. Even before Mr. Tillerson was confirmed, his staff fired six of the State Department's top career diplomats. In the following months, Mr. Tillerson launched a reorganization that he said will be the most important thing he will do, and that he has hired two consulting companies to lead the effort. Since he decided before even arriving at the State Department to slash its budget by 31%, many in the department have always seen the reorganization as a smokescreen for draconian cuts. Mr. Tillerson has frozen most of the hiring and recently offered a $25,000 buyout in hopes of pushing 2,000 career diplomats and civil servants out by 2018. He goes on to say that, you know, that they've fired all of these people. They've gone from 31 to 19 three-star generals, 369 remaining now out of the 431 minister and counselors. 14 have indicated they're going to leave soon. That's an 18% drop. I think this is good. But getting cuts like these are impossible.
It's one of the things you talk about on this week on the deep state.
Yes.
A lot of people, because deep state has been this term that has been thrown around as just this sort of generic defense of Trump every time something goes
wrong.
And
it goes into conspiracy land quickly.
Yeah. And so... We were looking at that, and because there have been in history, there are around the world, real legitimate deep state situations that are similar to what is accused.
Turkey is one right now.
Yeah. But you go into what it kind of means here in the United States, and, you know,
it's a progressive utopia.
Yeah. It's not a conspiracy. It's not necessarily people like trying to thwart Republicans. It's this long-standing group of people who have been in the same jobs for a million years. And this goes back to your meeting with George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you think it's about Trump, this goes back to what you talked about with George W. Bush when you met him and he was still in the Oval Office. And he told you basically, like, there's not really, no matter who wins the next election, a lot of this stuff isn't going to change because the same people are in the same positions and there's really no choice. You're not given a choice to change direction as much as you'd think. And that's why a lot of times you have people who are elected, Bush is one of them, who you kind of thought maybe he'll change things, and you don't really get that change.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that the State Department might be...
Gutted
in many
Should
ways.
Should have been done in the 1950s.
You know, that doesn't mean every one of these people who are leaving are bad people or anything like that, but you need change. You need things to be moving. You can't have people stuck in the same bureaucratic jobs for decades and expect things to improve. It's the same way John Conyers having 55, 57 years in Congress is not a good idea. It's not. It doesn't help.
Look, I can't get my arms around is how millennials will embrace big government when everything in their life shows that that system doesn't work. They reject that in everything else. They reject, you know, big layers of bureaucracy. They just, why do that way? Just let's just finish it. And they now have the capability of doing that. I mean, think about what blockchain can do for our voting process. Blockchain, which is what Bitcoin uses, is unhackable. You cannot hack it. It's the most secure way to communicate or do transactions. We could do blockchain voting by the next election. We could have that up and running. Why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we? Because people are entrenched in what they do. They don't want their jobs to change. They're fine and they're comfortable the way it is. That's why we need real innovators. And the first thing we have to do is just cut the fat and the layers upon layers upon layers of fat. And the State Department, quite frankly, is, I believe, the reason we have had so many problems in the Middle East. The philosophy has been wrong since World War One, and they just keep perpetrating that same philosophy over and over and over again, wrap it in new paper and call it something new. And it's not. It's the same. And it's why we have no credibility around the world. And it's why nothing works.
And yet, you're right. Millennials and many others embrace the government as the one pure thing, the one pure group of people who can get things done.
I mean, what's crazy is that is the exact opposite of what we were founded on. Mm-hmm. We were founded on the government is a nightmare. The government is fire. Fire is useful as long as you control it. But the minute it becomes in control, it'll burn you to a crisp. And we've forgotten that.
Yeah, there's so many examples of it. Like one of the most, random ones that I always come back to is the car seat situation. As a kid, a parent with two smaller kids, why am I buying, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars of car seats for my car? I understand that kids sitting in the back seat, there's issues with the seat belts and the way they fit because they're made for adults, right?
Right.
So it makes sense that at some point you wanted to change that, right? So the way they did that is governments decided to make car seats mandatory. Okay, we all know that makes sense. I want my kid in a car seat. It's mm-hmm. definitely a better mm-hmm. place for him to be. And the reason is because those seat belts are designed for adults. Now you're telling me that a car company could not come up with a better solution than an additional seat that you have to strap in this weird way that's impossible to remove.
So why don't we?
Right. So why don't we? Because governments have locked in laws that car seats are mandatory. So to change that, if a car company was to put in an adjustable seatbelt, right, that would just fit children, a clearly doable solution, right? And would make much more sense. Car would come in an operational format. You wouldn't have to go to Toys R Us or Babies R Us and buy car seats and replace them with bigger sizes and adjustable and strapping those things in, which is the bane of every parent's existence. But they can't do it because they'd have to overturn 50 state laws to get it done.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Watch Deep State tonight at 5 only on The Blaze.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I just heard Rand Paul on tax cuts, as the president gets ready to go and pitch the tax cuts. I want you to listen to what Rand Paul said, because it reminded me of something else I've heard before. Listen to this.
Hi, this is Senator Rand Paul with an update from Washington. One of Washington's biggest problems is thinking the money you make belongs to the government. I believe it's the other way around. The money you earn belongs to you, and government should have to justify why it should take it from you. That's why I'm pleased to see the Senate moving this week to pass a tax cut.
So did you hear that? I got a different philosophy. The money belongs to you, and the government has to justify why it's taking it. We flip that around. It's different thinking. Listen to this from 1924, Calvin Coolidge.
Costs of government are all assessed upon the people. The expenses of the government reach everybody. Taxes take from everyone a part of his earnings and force everyone to work for a certain part of his time for the government. These are some of the reasons why I want to cut down public expense. I want the people of America to be able to work less for the government and more for themselves. I want them to have the rewards of their own industry. This is the chief meaning of freedom. Until we can reestablish a condition under which the earnings of the people can be kept by the people, we are bound to suffer a very severe and distinct curtailment of our liberty.
Wow.
And taxes must be paid. They are not a voluntary contribution to be met out of surplus earnings. They are a stern necessity. They come first. It is only out of what is left after they are paid that the necessities of food, clothing, and shelter can be provided, and the comforts of home secure. One of the greatest favors that can be bestowed upon the American people is economy in government.
Amazing. Amazing. That is the reason we had the Roaring Twenties. The reason why we had the crash was greed, out of control greed. The reason why we had the Great Depression, it's not called the Great Depression around the rest of the world, it's just called the Depression. The reason why we had the Great Depression that lasted as long as it did is because we had government meddling with everything. The exact opposite of what Coolidge was doing, FDR did. Coolidge was an amazing guy. Amazing guy.
And an amazing public speaker.
He's really bad.
And a ball for himself. Oh, I love really that. I want to do all stories like that. Kim Kardashian trumpeted a new line of makeup products on Monday by posing in apparently nothing but gold glitter. The Instagram post grabbed more than 1 million likes with an R.
That's the way they used to sound on radio, too. I mean,
that's solid. There's something credible about it. I know, even when you're talking about nude pictures in glitter makeup, I feel like that you kind of get, oh, wow, whatever he's saying right now is fairly substantial.
Try this. I don't know why it has to sound like it's...
That's how he ends them.
Try this. Help me out with this one, Stu. You know, we've been talking about Bitcoin a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. By the way, a rumor. It's a pretty bad rumor, but it's a fun rumor of who the inventor of Bitcoin is. It may be one person. It may be several people. We don't know. But he put away 1 million Bitcoins for himself. That was how many billion? $9 billion as of yesterday.
The $9 billion. And that doesn't even include the forks. It's actually well over 10 when you add everything in.
I mean, somebody is walking around with $10 billion, and we don't know who it is. We have
never
been
accessed.
No.
That money's just sitting there, can be accessed by the inventor of Bitcoin, and has never been touched.
There's speculation that it's Elon Musk. I think it's weak speculation, but it's fun speculation that it's Elon Musk. Okay, so yesterday we talked about this, and a friend sent this to me and said, Glenn, here's the U.S. code. Help me out. Tokens or paper used as money. U.S. code, section 491, paragraph A. Mm-hmm. Whoever, being 18 years of age or over, not lawfully authorized, makes, issues, or passes any coin, card, token, or device in metal or its compounds intended to be used as money or any other currency not legal tender in the United States to procure anything of value or the use or enjoyment of any property or service from any automatic merchandise vending machine, postage stamp machine, turnstile, fare box, coin box, telephone, this is so old, parking meter or other lawful receptacles, depositories, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 1 year or both. Now, do you remember the guy in 2007 that did the Liberty coin? Remember?
Loosely, yeah.
He started a Liberty coin. He started a coin that was made out of gold and silver, and you could buy it, and he said you could use it for trade. And he went to prison. Mm-hmm. He went to prison. When this starts to make a serious dent, look what they're doing to gold, okay? They have found ways to keep people out of gold by doing, I don't even remember what it's called, but the reverse treasuries. So they started the reverse treasury where, I can't remember exactly how it works, but they started it in the 1980s after gold went through the roof. People start to panic about the currency. Gold goes through the roof. The government learned their lesson and they went, okay, well, we got to capture that money for the currency. So we'll make a reverse currency. So if it goes to gold, if it was going to go to gold, it'll incentivize people just stay with a treasury and just buy it into this treasury. So they've done all kinds of tricks to keep the price of gold suppressed so people don't freak out. Well, what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is just a new version of I'm freaking out. I don't know if money is going to be worth anything. And so I'm going to put my trust in this. Well, it's a currency, coin base. How long before the government says, you're not doing that?
It's possible. I think it did say in there something like metal and it's compounds, right?
Not lawfully authorized, makes, issues, or passes any coin, card, token, or device in metal or its compounds.
I don't know, obviously, exactly, you know, what the reasoning is, but this would also, every loyalty card, there's a million different things that would outlaw if you read that specifically.
Yeah, except a loyalty card is a loyalty card. This is a cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. This is saying there's no other currency. The name of it is a cryptocurrency.
Right, gift card. Right, I mean, anything that you have that has an ability to purchase other things, right, is covered by that, and there may be addendums to that.
Yeah, but Gap isn't going after the dollar,
right?
Bitcoin could go after the dollar. At what point is the pain in any one country so high from Bitcoin that they say we can't allow it?
And this is one of the arguments that people who love Bitcoin brings up, because people will say, well, what if the government cracks down on it? And they will say, correctly, that there's no way to stop it. There's no way to, unless you shut the entire internet off, there's no way to stop these currencies from spreading and being used.
No,
which
but
is
if you
true.
Own, if you own, for instance, right now, if you own money and you've put it into a foreign bank, and you haven't declared that money as being in that foreign bank, you can go to prison here in the United States. So the government can say it's illegal for all Americans to own it.
And that's the thing. And that, you know what that does, is it certainly chases people like me and you out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, while I like the concept of it, if it's illegal in the United States, I'm not going to deal with it. There are certain, you know, libertarians who might say, well, you know, they have no right to enforce these things and we'll go to other countries and we'll do what we have to do. The average person is going to bail on this stuff, mm-hmm. if that stuff occurs. Mm-hmm. And places like Coinbase, which is the mm-hmm. biggest exchange of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies in the United States, if they're not allowed to operate, right, like they'll probably go overseas and continue their business and they'll still get business, but it makes it a lot more difficult. It happened with, something that is much more questionable legally, which was online gambling. And there were big companies that were doing online poker and stuff, and they started in the United States, and they wound up having to move to other countries. And it wasn't until the U.S. government issued what I believe a ridiculous edict to that these companies had to stop, and you had to you were no longer allowed to send them money, and there was a lot of different regulations they put on, and it basically killed the industry for regular people. So there's still people who do it, right? I mean, of course, there's people who do it. There's people who, you know, drugs are illegal. There's still people who do drugs, right? But it's going to kick out the average person who doesn't want to deal with the legal hassles, who doesn't want to break the law, who doesn't want to be on the wrong side of it. And that's the threat. I think it would, at least in the short term, suppress the price because people
wouldn't
want to dive
in. The question is what does that, I mean, Bitcoin now is, I mean, think of this. Bitcoin is a fully automated company. There are no humans working for Bitcoin. It's a machine. It's been set up. Its program runs. No one can stop it. It's just a machine. You have to shut down the entire internet to be able to shut it down. So it's becoming one of the largest, if you will, corporations in the world. It's bigger than, is it bigger than Apple yet?
Not that big. No, it's $165 billion market cap just for Bitcoin. That doesn't include all the other ones. I think the total is over $300 billion
for
all crypto.
So it's becoming a gigantic corporation with no employees, no CEO, nothing, no humans involved. How much does that have to be worth before the government says, okay, enough? I mean, that's the thing that I think you have to solve. You have to get over that hurdle. The government, for this to really explode and really make it, you have to see what happens when it really starts to hurt the United States Treasury. And, you know, if it's at 10,000, I don't know what that number is. 20, 30, 50,000? What does it have to be before the Treasury says, you know what, this is getting out of hand? Boy, it hasn't been a good year for Uber, has it? Uber disclosed a breach of 57 million passengers and drivers' records. 57 million. Hackers accessed the personal information, names, driver's license, the drivers and the names, the email addresses, the phone numbers of passengers, all of it. The breach was just announced, and the personal information was actually stolen over a year ago. Congress is looking into it now. If you're only credit monitoring, I mean, it used to be that you could monitor credit like this. If you bought something in Brussels and then 20 minutes later, you bought something in Atlanta, that would be a flag and somebody would say, hey, it looks like stolen identity or credit. Well, that's not the way it works now. I mean, some people are just doing that, but that doesn't help you. Now, with systems like LifeLock, they have this proprietary technology. They do things like, how long has it taken you to put in your password? All these different things that they are monitoring. Where did you, if you were on one site, were you, and you got to this site to buy it, is that fit into the pattern of what sites you're normally on? I mean, it's crazy stuff now that can be done to make sure that it's you and nobody is stealing your identity. And if somebody does, they're there to fix it. They have a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist that will work to fix it. Nobody does it but LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code BECK. You get 10% off your LifeLock membership. It's LifeLock.com. Save 10% now. LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK. Promo code BECK and save 10%.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There's two articles that I read this morning that I thought were really, really good. Both came out earlier this week and late last. New York Daily News, panic is not the answer. We're at imminent risk of turning this hashtag MeToo movement into a frenzied rush to blame old men. Then there's another one from Media. It's time to man up, from Carly Fiorina. 100 years ago, American women were jailed, beaten, tortured, force-fed, all because they believed they had the right to vote. 100 years later, we can factually demonstrate that American women are the most educated, liberated, empowered, and powerful women in all of human history. And yet, 100 years later, we wake up daily to new revelations of sexual harassment and abuse visited on women and girls by powerful, successful, admired men in all walks of American life. Politicians, executives, coaches, athletes, artists, moguls, and the men of cloth. In every case, women bravely stepped forward. In virtually every case as well, their stories have been corroborated and verified. Let's get real. No one is shocked. Women are not, and men are not. I am. And maybe I'm just really naive, but I'd like to get into this tomorrow. I'd like to talk to you about this. I want to read her whole article to you. And maybe we'll see if Carly can come on tomorrow to explain it. But maybe I'm just a dummy, but I am shocked by the amount. Are you still?
Definitely. I mean, as far as how it's dominated the news cycle for several months.
I mean, it's like so many people. I mean, Charlie Rose?
Yeah.
I mean, just all of these people, one after another after another. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was happening in Washington, D.C. And it doesn't surprise me that much.
And it is happening in Washington, D.C., by the way. Millions of your tax dollars have gone to fund these settlements.
Right. But is this an epidemic? Is this happening all over the country? And I want to specifically ask the women in our audience to participate on tomorrow's program.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
They will come to know the truth. Dad murdered democracy in cold blood. That was what was written on a sign outside of the home of the FCC chairman over Thanksgiving weekend. He should have been home with his family, the chairman of the FCC, enjoying the holiday, just enjoying it. But instead, he was subjected to protesters with apparently nothing better to do than stand outside of his home with harassing signs and send pizzas to his door every hour, which actually sounds pretty good. I mean, I just want to point that part out. That's kind of a good deal.
Best protest ever.
It really is. But who does this on a Thanksgiving weekend? Apparently, people who are insanely mad that the chairman of the FCC sent an order to terminate most of the net neutrality regulations set in place by the former FCC commissioner. Attacking a family is not activism. This is terrorizing a family. I would bet that the protesters didn't even really understand net neutrality in the first place. Net neutrality does not guarantee a free and open internet for all. The regulations don't benefit the average man. It is always like this. The regulation was drawn up by Google. They benefit Google, and that's about it. Enforcing net neutrality does the exact opposite of what the proponents claim. It results in an internet where a handful of large corporations have access to peering agreements with the fast lane, and the rest of us are subject to far fewer options. So here's some free advice before, you know, you go out and protest somebody. Before harassing a family, you should know something about the subject that you're protesting, you know. Consider staying inside and researching the topic and having an intelligent conversation over turkey with your family and friends. But if you ever find yourself in this situation and you want to send free pizza to a home, you can send it to my house.
It's Tuesday, November 28th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, most families don't impact people over multiple generations as much as this family has impacted our world in one and two generations. Steve and Jackie Green join us. They're the founding family of the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., and the author of This Dangerous Book, How the Bible Shaped Our World and Why It Still Matters Today. Steve and Jackie, welcome.
Thank you, Glenn. It's good to be here.
So I was just in Hobby Lobby over the weekend, and we were talking as a family, and one of my older children was there, and we were talking about the Museum of the Bible, and she said, "How did this all begin, Dad? How did this happen?" And I said, well, I know Hobby Lobby started with, you know, frames in a garage, and the family just kind of grew up in it. But Steve and Jackie, how did the Bible part of it start?
Well, for me, it started at home before Hobby Lobby ever started. My parents grew up in a Christian home. My grandfather was a minister himself, my dad's dad. And, you know, my parents took us to church and taught us to love God's word and follow his ways in our lives and in our family. And so we that was part of our life. And my wife was the same. She grew up in a Christian home as well. And the Bible just being a part of our life from when we were born.
So, Jackie, you guys have a remarkable family, and you have seen what money usually does to a family. I just read a book. I can't remember the name of it, but it was about J. Paul Getty and his family and how the money just destroyed them. What is it that keeps your family on the track?
Well, I think, first of all, I would just say, you know, God helps us to realize and remember that everything we have, we've given to him, and he gave to us, and we just give it back to him. And so our blessings come from above, and there's great joy in realizing that, you know, we don't really have all the ownership, that it really belongs to God. So being a family of faith, thankfully, we have a family that everyone has embraced their own faith and embraces the teachings of the Bible for themselves. And I think that's paramount in where we are today.
Have you, do you think you could have done, you, do you guys think you could have accomplished just as a family? I don't even mean business, just as a family. Do you guys think you could have accomplished what you've accomplished if you lived in New York City?
I don't know. I mean, I think God can do anything anywhere, but we would have different challenges. Of course, we live in a great part of the country in the Bible Belt, and, you know, it's a great place to raise a family and to, you know, work hard and run a business.
So we are, you know, we were talking as we were walking through Hobby Lobby, and we were talking about the Museum of the Bible, and my daughter said, why wouldn't they build it where people would want to go see it? I mean, it's in Washington, D.C. Nobody wants the Bible. And I said, I think that's the point. What's the reaction that you guys have seen?
Well, when we first started looking, we were actually looking in your town in Dallas. And then I wanted to open up and said, what if God does one in Dallas? And when I look at the top 10 metros, the other two that stood out to me was New York City and Washington, D.C. And we did a survey. The survey showed it would be best attended in D.C., which really makes sense because that's the hub of museums in our country where museum goers go. And so we just feel like that God knew best, that this facility that we acquired was a great location, just two blocks from one of the most attended museums in our country. And that it was the right place for us to be. Some kind of chide us thinking that, you know, our intent is to impact politics. And of course, I'm sitting here thinking, well, who isn't in this town to impact politics? And what would be wrong if that was our motive?
Yeah.
But it was really because this is where it'd be best attended. A lot of visitors here are international. It'll have an international impact. And we just think that our legislators ought to know the foundation of our nation and its biblical roots, and hopefully they would come in and it impact them as well.
Are you surprised at the number of people in Washington that they really have no clue as to our real heritage?
Yeah, you know, I think that is a sad commentary, not just here, but in our nation, is the lack of understanding of the biblical influence the Bible had on our founders and how that it shaped our nation, our freedoms, our economy, our government. It just had a huge impact. And I think we probably know it less today than ever, partly because we don't teach the Bible in our schools like we once did. And so there is a great need to educate America on the Bible's impact
so
on our world.
How do you do that with, I mean, even Christopher Hitchens, you know, who was a huge atheist, he said, if you want to understand Western culture, you must understand the Bible. You won't understand Shakespeare if you haven't read the Bible. You know, it is the cornerstone. And he said that it should be taught as literary, in a literary class. But you're not going to get that now. How do we make this shift?
Well, and he's not the only. Even Richard Dawkins in his book, The God Delusion, says something very similar. He said that to be literate, to culturally literate, you need to know it. And he lists over 100 examples of phrases just in our everyday language that comes from the Bible. Good Samaritan, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, and so forth. So even they recognize to be educated within our world, you need to know this book because it's had such an impact. And that's one of the reasons why we have taken the position in the museum of not espousing our faith. We're just teaching the facts of the book because we are interested in having a curriculum to educate students in our schools about the Bible in a non-sectarian way, not espousing faith, just teaching the facts of this book because we agree with Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins that it ought to be part of our educational system.
You, the name of the book that you guys have just put out is This Dangerous Book. And I look at what's happening in the Middle East. People, you know, won't recognize that the group of people that are probably, you know, rivaling the first century that are under attack now, more than anybody else, are Christians. And it is for that dangerous book. They seem to, I know you guys travel all over the world. The people that I have met in the Middle East have a very different view of their responsibility as a Christian, to that book and to those words and to their faith than I think most Americans do.
Yeah. In our nation, it is just easy. And I think that as a society, starts, down a path of persecuting Christians, it really separates those that are serious about their faith and those that are just pretending. And it's easy to pretend to have a faith and attend church time, you know, from time to time. But there are parts of our world where it's a life and death situation if a person wants to follow the principles of this book. And part of why we called it This Dangerous Book, we talk about those in the past that have given their life because of their love for this book. And it's no different today. I understand there's probably more people that are suffering for their faith today than ever before because it's a challenging world, and there are people that love this book and there are people that hate it. And it shows up in our news from time to time.
Jackie, you talk a lot in the book about something I think Christians have a difficult time with, as I think everybody does, which is tithing and giving giving your money away. And it's not just about being charitable. It's also about leading with the charity, giving that money away first, giving the money to God first. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, sure. Yeah, I think as a family that we, as I mentioned earlier, we do feel like that our blessings come from God. And you know, when you realize that, when you know that in your heart, it makes it a lot easier to understand that we also, you know, we're taught in the Bible to give to the, to take care of the widow, the orphan, and to help those in need and feed the hungry and, you know, clothing and that sort of thing. And I think it, when you embrace the principles taught in the Bible, it becomes much easier to do that, recognizing that everything we have is from God. And we share some of that. We share some of our other personal experiences with the Bible in our book, and we look at the impact of the Bible and its influence in our world and our culture every day all around us. And then, you know, we feel like it's important for people to understand and be encouraged to read the Bible and learn more about it, because it's the best-selling book of all time, consistently, year after year.
Yeah, you're right.
There's even more than Harry Potter. That's confirmed.
No. Listen to this. This is in the book. I love this. Let's see. Da Vinci Code, C.S. Lewis, Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe, estimated about 80 million each. Don Quixote, 150 million. Catcher in the Rye, 65 million. Black Beauty, 50 million. Harry Potter, 100 million, along with The Little Princess, 100 million. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, 150 million copies. The Bible is estimated to be 5 billion copies. 5 billion.
Seems like it deserves a museum. It really does.
Well, and some have said, you know, why now? And of course, more times you get the question, why hasn't this been done before? I think we have the best material of any museum here in D.C. because this book has impacted our world unlike anything else. So its story needs to be told, and that's why we wanted to tell it in a state-of-the-art, first-class museum.
And I appreciate the book that you guys have just put out, too, because it talks about your personal life. I'm fascinated by how grounded your family is. And you talk about the adoption in your family and just a lot of stuff that I can really relate to. And I appreciate you sharing the personal side as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless, guys.
Well, And one of those is just that we feel like it was providential, and our founders in this nation felt the same thing time and time again. They just felt like God was in the middle of it, and we feel that with this museum and our adoption, and those are some of the stories that we share.
Thank you, guys. God bless you. Have a good holiday.
This Dangerous Book, How the Bible Has Shaped Our World and Why It Still Matters Today, by Steve and Jackie Green. You may know them from Hobby Lobby. What they're doing with
this
museum, they're remarkable people, and what they're doing is really important. If someone doesn't set, you know, these principles and really kind of put them in stone, they really need to be back in basically tablet form at this point.
And imagine competing against museums in Washington, D.C. I mean, you're going up against the Smithsonian. Wow, you better not roll out a bad museum. And this is a stunning museum. And it's what they have done, you know, just literally from building frames in their garage in the 1970s to expanding Hobby Lobby to taking on the government and the Supreme Court on we're not offering abortion in our healthcare plan,
or we'll pay the fine every day.
Every day.
Yeah, it's interesting because you see, here's a family, and you've talked to them more than I have, just in brief interviews. You've talked to them more at length, but it's this is a family that has a location of their store in basically everybody's town, and what they're doing now is what they consider their life's work.
Oh yeah,
I mean, Hobby Lobby, they do a great job. You know, they've done a lot of important things, but what they're doing now is really they're setting up a long-term legacy.
And I know them, and their true life work is their family, and it is their best work. Their children are amazing, absolutely amazing. Read the book. This Dangerous Book by Steve and Jackie Green, available everywhere. And I know it is also available at Hobby Lobby because I saw it there over the weekend.
Nice.
Getting a good night's sleep is easier said than done, especially if you hear a noise downstairs. What do you do in that situation? I know what I do. Now, somebody was talking to me about we had a laser firing range here in the studios a couple of weeks ago. And they were like, I was feeling pretty good about myself until you stood up and then you took it. And I'm a very good shot, so I know exactly what I'm going to do if I hear a sound.
Almost the only thing that you're good at.
It is. It really is.
It's really incredible.
It really is.
I mean, we were at the range the other day. We were making a video with your attachment to your AR-15.
Yeah.
And it was impressive.
Yeah, no, that wasn't. No, that wasn't. I mean, I went up skeet shooting this weekend, 29 out of 29. It was good. It's good. It's the only thing. I wish I could make money at it, or I wish there was. But if you come into my house, I'm not sleeping with one eye open. I have an alarm system. I have SimpliSafe. That thing goes off. That alerts me. I'm coming for you. SimpliSafe. You can order it online in minutes. It'll have it on your doorstep this week. You open the box, you plug it in, and your home is protected. Professional home security, no tools, no hard wiring, no contracts, no hidden fees. It's keeping yourself safe. SimpliSafe. The alarm system you own, and it's $14.99 a month to have the monitoring, no contracts. Get a 10% discount on the system right now if you go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com. Save yourself 10% right now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So the Victoria's Secrets fashion show is on tonight. My question is, how?
In this environment?
In this environment, how is that not objectifying women?
Well, because you would never look at their breasts.
Oh, you'd never look at them as a sexual...
No. No. Because we found out yesterday, I think, 50 or 60% of millennials believe looking at breasts would be sexual harassment. And clearly that never occurs to these millennials who are walking down the stage in no clothing.
I mean,
it never occurs.
Seriously, how is this not objectifying women? I mean, I don't have a problem with it.
Because they're doing it on their own, right? I guess
they're power, they're strong, powerful women.
It's funny.
But am I supposed to notice that they're beautiful?
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
How does that work?
You bastard. How dare you? How dare you notice that?
Exactly right.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat Gray joins us from Pat Gray Unleashed. He's telling me that he's going to be watching the Victoria's Secret thing tonight just for the articles.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
They have really good articles.
They do, don't
really?
They? Yeah. I haven't even noticed anything else.
Their commentary on the trade imbalance with China was really interesting.
That's why I'm watching.
Yeah.
That's why I'm watching.
Yeah.
I need that perspective.
Right. So. Strong women.
Mm-hmm.
Strong women.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Intelligent women.
Intelligent women. I don't think they talk to them.
No. Women who are empowered.
Yes.
Empowered to walk
in lingerie.
In lingerie and heels.
Yes.
I mm-hmm. mean, that's.
But you have to look for the deeper meanings, too.
Oh,
you have to look for the deeper meaning.
There's no mm-hmm. doubt about it. I always assume there's a deeper meaning. I don't always pick
it
up.
You know what, Pat? I know that I of course know the deeper meaning, but I'd like you to explain the.
I don't want to insult the intelligence.
No,
of our
I mean I think it would be. I think it would
so
be
well aware of the deeper meaning.
Yeah,
you know, of you know, women walking in lingerie,
mm-hmm. right?
In heels.
In heels.
Right.
Is it possible the deeper
look.
The deeper meaning is the secret? Like Victoria has a secret, and perhaps the secret is the deeper meaning.
I think clearly, yes.
That we never actually uncover.
How the underpants empower you.
They do.
Yeah.
My understanding is the less clothing you wear, the more empowered you are. There's a ratio to that.
I don't believe
and they give
that
you,
is a current idea.
It seems to be.
Yeah.
Watch network television tonight, and they will point it out for you. What is it, ABC that airs that thing?
I don't know. I do not know. I've never watched that.
I've never watched it either.
Show.
No, me neither, guys.
Well, I've never watched it because I'm married.
I think, actually, there are women who watch that show for whatever
really?
Reason. Really? Yes. My wife has flipped it on before.
Has she really?
Yeah. I think there's a, you know, where do beauty magazines get sold all the time, right? What's in them?
Yeah.
A bunch of women wearing no clothing. They're not sold to men, generally speaking. I mean, Cosmo doesn't go to dudes. I mean,
true.
You know, there is a comparative
analysis. There must be a market
analysis.
For it.
You know, I've never asked my wife. We should call my wife. Ask her. Let's watch that tonight. See what she says.
I think it's a fair question.
What?
You know, will she watch it with you as a family event? You know, it's Christmas.
As a family
it's
event.
It's coming
it
up on Christmas.
It's the holiday.
You know? I mean, it's a really good way to do some shopping. Right. I mean, you're buying for your wife. I mean, she might enjoy some of the items.
Sure.
There.
That's all my wife is asking for is Victoria's Secret lingerie. That's all she wants.
Really? Yeah. See? Right there. That proves it.
That's all she's really ever wanted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not a gift for you. It's for her.
Not for me at all.
Yeah.
She just loves it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's how she does housework.
I just try to... in the heels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out how this works in today's world. But why expect any kind of consistency?
Yeah, there shouldn't be any.
Anywhere. We had kind of an interesting day with Donald Trump and Pocahontas.
That's a really bad day. First of all, the Pocahontas thing... I wasn't as worried about that as I was holding the event to honor the Code Talkers in front of a portrait of Andrew Jackson.
Amen.
That's so good.
What Amen. Was what that? Who made doing? That decision?
Amen.
Hey, let's do it in the Andrew Jackson room. No, you like
know,
that.
No, you know what that is? That was...
That's a complete
that
lack
was
of...
Bannon.
Yeah, Bannon's a big Jackson
That was
guy.
Bannon who put that painting in the Oval Office.
Yeah, but you can't... You got to remove that when you have.
Do you think he knows?
That's like honoring white farmers in Zimbabwe in front of a mural of Robert Mugabe.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is the guy that took all your farms.
Right.
Here he is. Have fun. I mean, this is a great day for farming in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
You like that? You like the Mugabe? Just had the mural done.
Yeah.
What are you even thinking? They're not thinking.
They're not thinking.
They're not thinking.
They're not thinking.
They're not paying attention.
Andrew Jackson's painting should not even be anywhere near the Oval Office. I mean, he was such a bad, bad guy.
Well, he was nicknamed the Indian Killer and Sharp Knife.
So wait, what are you saying there? I don't understand.
Put his portrait up so we can honor the Code Talkers.
But hang on. Hang on just a second.
Unreal.
Sharp Knife was only shiving the Indians.
That's only right.
For the land.
Right.
Okay? And it that wasn't for the country. It was so he could become rich.
True.
You know, he was poor when he entered the Oval Office and was the wealthiest man in the country when he left the office, mainly because he shivved people for their land.
So you're saying he was an entrepreneur?
No.
Of sorts.
No. No.
No?
No. Sharp Knife? No.
Indian Killer?
No.
It was a bizarre moment there.
Yeah, it is.
And then you have to like the mental trick that happens in Trump's mind where he's standing in front of Native Americans / Indians, as we used to say, and he thinks, I know one thing about Indians. Pocahontas is Elizabeth Warren. Like, it's like the one thing he knows,
so
he just has to throw it out there.
So awkward.
And it was so awkward for them because they obviously couldn't hear what he was saying or something, because you just looked at me and saw they had no recollection of what he was saying. And, and he was like, hey, we've got a Pocahontas here. And they kind of looked at him like,
I don't think they knew
what
he was talking
about. They had no idea.
They're not.
And to be used as a backdrop for something like that with Jackson behind them is just an embarrassment.
It's a different thing, though, too. Like the Jackson thing, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't
know
or care about that. That's something.
No, but I don't think
that's what it shows.
But I also don't think he knows that that's not cool. You know what? Donald Trump has a lot in common with our grandparents. And I've told this story before, but it's the best story. My grandfather, this is in 1970, I don't know, 2 or 3, something like that. He's trying to make sure that, I don't become racist. And, we're not racist in our family.
Good lesson.
Good lesson. Yeah. Yeah. It's how he got there. He was a guy who lived through the Great Depression, born in, 1903. And he said, no matter what anybody tells you, coloreds are exactly like you. I'm like, even like 8, I'm thinking, I don't think colors is the right word, Grandpa. But I mean, it's kind of like that with Donald Trump. He has, I don't think he knows how offensive just saying Pocahontas is.
Oh, no. Again, not malicious at all.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so either. I don't think the Andrew Jackson thing is malicious. I don't think the Pocahontas thing is malicious.
They just don't know. He just doesn't.
He
doesn't think that way.
He's getting through the moment. I mean, if you're never going to get a statesman out of Donald Trump,
well,
that's not what he does.
That's what people didn't want, right? They didn't want a statesman.
Yeah.
They didn't want a politician. They didn't want somebody who has experience in this stuff. They wanted him. They wanted this guy. the guy who will honor the Code Talkers, the Navajo Code Talkers, in front of a portrait of Andrew Jackson. That's what people wanted.
Is Pocahontas a racial slur, however?
I don't think so, no. I don't think so.
No, I think just, if you call
it's somebody, mocking Elizabeth it's mocking Warren because she doesn't her. Really have Indian ancestry.
If you are saying, you know, anyone who calls themselves Indian, Pocahontas, it is a racial yes. slur. If she was Native American, okay, which I don't believe she is,
right.
But if she was Native American, you know, then saying, oh, yeah, little Pocahontas over here, absolutely a racial slur.
Yeah, if you use it in that context, it would
when
be.
She is trying to say, I am a Native American.
And she's not. I don't think that's a racial slur.
No, it's not. If no. she's not.
It's just a slur against Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, it's yes. just, you're a fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We have, you know, me smoke 'em fraud. I mean, you
right.
know
it's
what
that,
I mean?
Yeah, it's that kind level of...
Which
yeah.
is a line you wouldn't want to say to the Navajos either.
Right, yes.
right. You know. No, Trump I'm trying to bring it down to the level of yeah. what he could have said. you know, we should all breathe a sigh of relief that he only said Pocahontas.
Yes. And that he didn't greet them with how.
Yes, that would have been bad.
That would have been bad.
People ask me all the time, how? I bet they say the same thing to you.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been thinking, why? Right, Chief?
It's like a really bad Indian Abbott and Costello routine.
You could almost see him doing it, though. Couldn't you?
You could have seen that. He doesn't care about that stuff.
He doesn't care.
I was... The Andrew Jackson thing, I think, is a much more interesting observation than what the media is going to.
Because
which
that's not Donald Trump. There's somebody. Nobody.
I know. Nobody in the White House said, hey, you know what? This is really insensitive. This is the guy who was called Indian killer. This is, maybe we don't, you know, have this up in the background. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is the guy who broke every treaty ever made with the Indians,
yeah.
virtually,
and
took their land.
The fact that he made a joke that he made on the campaign trail a million times about Elizabeth Warren.
I don't know, there's something about saying it in front of Code Talkers.
No, I know. Look, it's not the appropriate venue, but that is not what you're going to get out of Donald Trump. That is not what he does.
Right.
He's as advertised on that. He's going to say what he says. He's going to make his jokes. And you can't be offended every time Donald Trump makes a joke. You can't.
No.
The Andrew Jackson thing is like, all right, that you probably...
Somebody in the White House should have noticed.
Somebody.
Yeah. Somebody
That's
should.
Probably somebody. Something should have caught.
But that White House doesn't think Andrew Jackson was a problem. I mean, you know, remember, you hang the portraits...
Their favorite president.
Yeah, you hang portraits in the Oval that you're trying to emulate, and he wants to emulate Andrew Jackson, which wouldn't work out well for any of us if that were to be.
Those Code Talkers are on their way to Oklahoma right now if he's trying to emulate Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Walking.
Yeah. It's not a good walk
not
either.
Good. Not good.
No.
Not good.
No.
Maybe Pocahontas will help.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. Available anywhere you get your podcasts as well. Mm. iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. Where I don't know if those are the only three I know, but there's probably others as well.
Walkman.
Yeah, you can record it on a cassette and put it in your Walkman.
Walkman.
Mm-hmm, it's available there.
Those kinds of things.
And wherever hardware is sold.
When an emergency happens, you hope and pray that you know, everybody is going to be safe, and then you hope and pray it's not you next. We are in an age of disruption. Unlike anything that we have seen probably since the 1800s, the invention and the rate of adoption of these inventions is changing everything, absolutely everything. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't know tomorrow what it's going to bring. I mean, do you hear about the volcano? Why do volcanoes just seem like something that happened, you know, in Roman times or Greek times, but not in our day?
No, they've happened in our day.
I know, yeah. But they never really seen it. It seems like, oh my gosh, it's like a dinosaur thing. You never really think of volcanoes. Like, you think about going to Bali. I've always just thought of the beaches and how nice. I never thought, well, I wonder if it's volcano season. Have you? I don't know if they come in seasons.
I don't think they do.
But I mean, you know. Anyway, you don't know what tomorrow brings. That's why My Patriot Supply is here, to help you prepare for almost any emergency. I would imagine volcanoes too, but I don't know. You can start with their 102 servings of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. 102 servings of really good food for $99. All you have to do is call 800-271-63. It's 800-271-63. You can order the kit or you can prepare online at preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com. Lasts up to 25 years, less than a buck per serving. Can't beat it. 800-271-63. Preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
All this week at 5 o'clock, the Blackboard is unpacking the deep state. It's something you might hear a lot of talk about or read about, the deep state, but what does it actually mean? What is it? There's two kinds of deep state, and we break that down for you. We do have a deep state, but not the kind of deep state that I think most conspiracy theorists would like to believe that we have. But we have a very dangerous deep state. We'll explain that all this week at 5 o'clock. We're also doing something, playing back some of my favorite interviews that we have done also on the Blaze TV. And last night was Eric Schmidt from Google. Eric had written a book where he was really, you know, talking about Ray Kurzweil and praising him. And Ray works for Google, or did at the time. And Eric seemed to disagree with his own book. We were talking about life and how do you define life? Now, this is in 2014. This seems ancient to me now. This is close to something we have to discuss right now. Here it is in 2014. Listen.
Well, I think we all understand that life is basically defined as consciousness, right? That ultimately consciousness is the unique thing that humans have.
So if you can make a robot conscious, it's life?
Maybe not. We'll have to decide. But consciousness is more than an analytical process. It's more than a verbal process. It's something that is not understood. It's never been understood by philosophers, and scientists today cannot explain consciousness.
If Ray is right, because this is one of the things he's working on, if he's right, and you can download somebody, let's say a soldier on the battlefield, and he's still got it, but he's lost everything else, and you could download his essence and put it into a working machine, have you created life or saved a life?
These are the questions of science fiction. The good news about your question...
But it's not science fiction.
But what you're describing is many, many, many years from now.
2030, according to the guy who works for you.
Well, I will be a little bit more pessimistic.
2040.
Okay. It's a long, long time. And the reason is that as we understand the parallelism of the brain, which presumably is our consciousness, it will be many, many years before we can simulate what you're describing.
I so disagree with him, and so does Elon Musk, so does Stephen Hawking, so does Bill Gates, so does obviously Ray Kurzweil. So disagree with him, and you'll notice he'll say, well, that is something we're going to have to decide. Who's we? Because we as a society are not having this conversation. As I tried to have that conversation with you, you say, well, that's many, many, many years off. Well, perhaps it's not. Perhaps it's 10 or 15 years off. So in the event that it is 10 or 15 years, maybe we should decide that right now. You check the interviews out if you're a subscriber at theblaze.com. We'll see you tonight, 5 o'clock, Deep State, Part 2.
Glenn Beck.